It's May 13th, 2015, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's technology. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. On tonight's special edition of Bite Marks Cafe, we'll jump right into our conversation with a couple of news guests. Bi-Ling Chua and Alice Lee will first tell us about a new summer course called Entrepreneurship, Business Remodeling, and Fundraising. Then Jay Fidel will join us once again to tell us about an upcoming panel on public spaces.
And finally, we'll talk about an innovative student-driven project to cool Hawaii's classrooms called Fahrenheit 73. Please note that today's program is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking any of your calls, but we always welcome your feedback, which you can email us at feedback@bitemarks.org. Now joining us is Bi-Ling Chua, and she's from iBeam, and of course Alice Lee from the Scheidler School of Business, and they're both here to tell us about an upcoming summer course called Entrepreneurship, Business Remodeling, and Fundraising. Welcome to the show, Bi-Ling and Alice.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, no, so this has been a course that I guess has been under development. And Alice, maybe you can share with us, what was your thought process behind coming up with this summer course?
Well, I wish that I could claim the credit for coming up with
the... Well, you can take the credit. I mean, that's okay. I mean, we're only friends here.
Well, I guess I have to be really grateful of the opportunity, because back in... I think it was November last year when Blue Startup had the East Meets West conference. Mm-hmm. I had a chance to meet with Bi-Ling's colleague from Hong Kong by the name of Wilton Chow. He's mm-hmm. actually a professor at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. Not only did he come to the conference here last year, he actually came and speak to some of the students at the Scheidler College of Business. So I got to know a little bit about what he was teaching in Hong Kong. And I think the most impressive part about the program is he was telling us that, well, there are a lot of success stories about startups, but not too many people talk about the failures. And I guess he, part of his course, he addresses those issues. Mm-hmm. And I guess looking at it further, I've seen a lot of things that he has done, and I think Bi-Ling can add to that. But he's a very impressive person. He has, founded the Q-Leap Asia. And I guess I'll let Bi-Ling take over from this time.
Sure. So now, is he basically bringing the class that he taught in Hong Kong here to Hawaii, or is he modifying it?
Yes, he's adapting the course that he teaches there, and it's a hugely popular program. Mm-hmm. Actually, I hope that it's not too early to say that some of the students in Hong Kong are contemplating coming here to take the course just from him.
Because so it's harder to get in that class over there.
It's hard, and also it's a timing. They want to take it straight away. They don't want to wait for another year to take the course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what I can do is explain a little bit about
sure,
what the course is all about. It's for people who are interested in venture development, and it'll give them the knowledge and skills to address a very important challenge for young tech companies, and that is the ability to raise serious funding for, you know, to execute a business opportunity and also for the company's growth. So what they'll do is that the students who are attending the course will learn how to approach what we call third-party investors, who are early-stage venture capitalists and also business angels. And we found that successful companies, companies that have been successful in raising funds, they are successful because they know how to do one thing really well. They know how to address the concerns of the investor. So, and that means that the entrepreneur will have to remodel their business. They have to make changes, or they have to reconstruct their business. And that's what the course is going to teach them. And those failure factors that Alice mentioned, is that that's where a lot of learning takes place. And Wilton has been able to identify the concerns of the investors, because they don't invest if the entrepreneur fails to address mm-hmm. these issues that they believe as important.
Mm-hmm. So, Alice, can you tell us who the audience of this is. Certainly, we have focused on and highlighted a lot of the entrepreneurial community here in Hawaii, which is a very diverse group. But because it's coming through your program, I would imagine it's focused more on students or someone with a tie with UH?
Well, initially, that's what we were thinking of, that this this particular course, which will be offered in the summertime, would be offered as an elective to a lot of the MBA students. But then we were also thinking that there would be a lot of other people in the community who might be interested in learning from a successful person like Wilton. So we actually would welcome participations from alumni, from anyone out there in the community. We've also sent this information to other universities, including Chaminade. So for those students who are interested in the course, they get 3 credits for it. But otherwise, other people in the community taking the course would look at this as a professional development course.
Now, Biling, when the instructor addresses the students who are attending and he speaks about venture capital and investors, is it coming from the perspective of a U.S. investor or a Chinese investor, or is there any difference? An investor is an investor.
Yeah, I think generally investors, they look for the same things. But if you are if you want to grow into the Asian market, then you have to, you have to kind of be aware of some of the demands of that market. So if you're approaching Asian investors, then of course you have to kind of be able to react to their concerns because they know the Asian market. And if you're a company that wants to go to an Asian market and that you want their money, you have to take care of those things.
So how would you characterize this class to be more geared to someone who is interested in perhaps attracting the Asian investor for the potential of being, let's say, looking at a market in Asia?
So the students have projects, all right? And these are real technology companies in Hawaii. So Wilton is ready to kind of make it very U.S.-centric or Hawaii-centric. But if the company that they have selected has a potential for the Asian market, then they're free to do so as well. But if it's a market is U.S. or in Hawaii, then you have to kind of adapt to.
Right. So it's pretty general purpose for whoever wants to attend, learn about, what it's like to interest and attract the investors, right? Regardless of where that person is.
Yeah.
Now, you had mentioned, Alice, that Wilton is, he leads his own venture fund, the Q-Leap Venture Fund, and it's focused mainly in Asian early stage technology ventures. Do you anticipate part of this course, and you had mentioned that some students are considering coming here to take this class from Asia, that he's going to be including a lot of these case studies, I would imagine, of some of his experiences working with startup companies in the technology space?
Yeah, definitely. Again, I guess as Biling mentioned, we're looking at companies here locally, but Wilton actually, because of a lot of the projects that he has done, he's actually trying to, it's not succession planning, but he's trying to teach the younger generation in how to assess and evaluate projects.
That's right. And, well, a good reason why Alice is bringing this course in is because in Hong Kong, on average, the students who have remodeled the business have a success rate of 20 to 30% rate of having offers from investors who listen, who are there for the presentation of the pitch. So it's a very successful learning model.
Great.
That he has been able to, that he's done in Hong Kong. And so Scheidler probably wants to bring that here to enrich their own portfolio of entrepreneurship courses and because of the success.
So I'm excited about it. Where? Give us the details as to where, when, and how much.
Sure. When it will be from July 7th to August 14th this year. And let's see. And the cost is $2,406 for a 3-credit course. And if you want more information, visit us at our website, which is shiloh.hawaii.edu/executive.
Sounds
and
good.
And there's a lot of time to look into that. It starts when again?
It starts at from July 7th to August 14th.
Perfect.
Sounds good. Well, thanks, Bi-Ling and Alice, for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
And, of course, now joining us is Jay Fidel from ThinkTech, and he's here to tell us about an upcoming panel on public spaces. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. Always enjoy being here.
Well, Jay, we always enjoy having you come on. And you've always got an interesting panel up your sleeve. And what every month you're putting these panels on?
Every month in the third Thursday of the month at Laniakea, we do a lunch and panel program. Lunch starts at 11:30. The program starts at 12. We go to 1:30. And then we have this one-on-one thing where we encourage the audience to press the flesh with the speakers. That
Excellent.
Way they can get to say hi and meet them and really enjoy them personally.
So what's the topic for this upcoming lunch?
It's about public spaces. You know, we do social policy. We do political policy. We do economic. We do tech. We do policy. And one of the policies that is an issue these days is how we're going to develop the state. You know, we've had a lot of focus on Kaka'ako and all the condominiums there, and that'll happen again. It'll be a stress point for our society, if you will, going forward. I mean, there's one condominium that's going for $100 million. How do you like that? And the homeless below, you know, they can't afford that just yet. So, you know, we're looking into architecture and city planning, urban planning, which is a sort of an art that we sort of forgot about since statehood. And this is one of the programs that we're talking. We had a program on Kaka'ako. We've had programs on investment in real estate. And now this one is about opening the open spaces, the public spaces.
And I know that's definitely a topic of conversation in Kaka'ako. You know, Kaka'ako Agora, but Intra-Island Terminal is kind of a different way of thinking about a public space and inside of a converted warehouse. Now, one thing that is always true about your panels is that they're jam-packed. It's not like a panel of three people and a moderator. It's practically a meeting in and of itself that we just get to listen in. So before we run out of time, who are the presenters?
Yeah, we're giving you a lot of
I'm looking
heads
at the list.
Here.
One, two, three, four. So
I thought you'd never ask, Brian. Okay, this is not an order of importance or alphabetical.
Of course, right?
It's the way I recall them. Scott Wilson, he's the president of the AIA Honolulu, and he's an architect, obviously. He feels very passionate about public spaces, and he wants to tell us that it's not so much a question of preserving them, but regaining them, because we already kind of lost them. Mm. We have Brittany Ta'amu Miyashiro. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know her.
Right?
She's
at
Box Jelly.
She's
Box Jelly.
Yeah. And she's a young person, just got out of college recently, has very strong feelings about public spaces in Hawaii, and she is going to make the charge. She is going to tell those guys what she and her generation want and make demands on them.
Sounds
so she's
good.
Our opening speaker. Glenn Miura, he's an architect. He designed Tamarind Park up here in Bishop Square, a successful public space, very few successful public spaces. A public space is a gathering space, like Honolulu, like the word Honolulu. It's a gathering place, okay? And the idea is you have it fun, you have it entertainment, you have people, you know, interacting with each other. You have a civic engagement in public spaces. That's what it's all about from the days of Rome and Greece. Now I have to go back on
my phone
here.
Ben Lee, former city manager, a name that I thought was
Oh, you know
familiar.
About that. Yeah. Ben Lee, he designed a lot of public spaces, and he has a lot to say about them. He has very distinct ideas. Tonya Moy, she's an architect, and she's part of the architectural tour that happened last week, which we covered, and she's going to talk about public spaces downtown. Fritz Johnson, a tremendous international background, seen it all everywhere. He's going to talk. He's an architect. Also, Ian Sanderson is a lawyer and engineer. He talks about how public spaces affect climate change. There's a relationship between climate change and public spaces.
No. In the case of that definition of public space, he's not talking about co-working spaces. What kind of public
space? Public space is
park,
public. It's
park?
Outside. Yeah. You know, do not confuse that with what's happening with Kamehameha Schools on Cook Street and the inside. That's a private space. Mm-hmm. Make no mistake.
Okay.
We're talking about public spaces outside where people gather, where it's dedicated to the public.
So when Brittany from Box Jelly talks about public spaces, she's not talking about Box Jelly then?
No.
Okay.
No. She just happens to be from there and represents that generation.
I see. Okay.
David Miller, he's the chief executive officer of Architects Hawaii, which is a very large architectural firm, also very passionate about public spaces. You know, we unleashed something with this program. We found that people were very passionate about this, especially architects. They don't have a chance. Usually they work for clientele who say, you know, we don't care about that. But now their professional interest comes out. Now we hear from them from the heart. That's the interesting part about this program. You probably want to know where and when.
No. Before we get to the where and when, what do you want to accomplish by having this panel?
I want to make people realize that we are like frogs in the boiling water. You know that reference, you know, mm-hmm. if you're a frog and the water is getting warmer little by little, you don't jump out. If it gets hot right away, if it's hot at the beginning, you jump out and save your life. Otherwise, you boil slowly and you die. And the problem with public spaces is they're getting eaten up around us and we don't realize it. So if you ask me, the purpose of this program, as so many of our programs, is to raise public awareness about the fact that our public spaces are being lost and we have to take affirmative steps to regain them. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention Carol Taylor. He's relevant to your question. He's a lawyer. He's the guy who saved Kapi'olani Park in the 80s. Went to the Supreme Court of the state and saved Kapi'olani Park. Mm-hmm. It would have been taken. We cannot
That's prime real estate right there, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So okay. The development pressures are always going to be demanding, you know, the commercialization of public spaces. And we, all of us, the public, have to protect them.
Okay,
so
I never
thought you'd never ask.
This event happening.
It's at Laniakea, but you knew that.
Yeah.
Which is the YWCA down on Richard Street. And it's on May 21st,
next
Thursday, coming soon. And it starts at 11:30. And the price is under our website, not very cheap. You can get a bargain. We have twofers now,
twofers.
Two people can come for a reduced price, okay? And the website, of course, is thinktechhawaii.com. So hope you guys come as press and enjoy it.
That's right. And if you say Bite Marks Cafe, you'll get a little bit of...
Oh, yeah, okay, big time. Okay. We give you twofers at least.
Thanks, Jay, for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Now, before we take a break, Bert and I wanted to take a little moment to invite you as well to an event this Saturday at Iolani School. It is called the Unconference. Bert, how many years have you been putting this on?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked, Ryan, because that is something that I think we've been doing for 8 years, going on 8 years, and we're probably one of the, originators of this Unconference format. I'll admit that we sort of followed the bar camp format where people can come to this event. They are part of the event itself because they are all proposing the sessions that we will cover. And what we've done over the years is sort of help design a way that people can suggest topics, and you can actually do that right now. So there's a link that you can go to suggest ideas for subject topics. And what we will do at the Unconference is kind of go through the top ones that get selected, and then we will actually put up a grid. And those will become the session during that day
of
the Unconference.
I've always loved it. You know, it's not like there's no keynote speakers that are driven by sponsors. There's no program where you're like, I'm not really interested in this topic. Basically, if you show up and enough people like the topic you want to talk about, there will be a conversation about it. In fact, it is the first thing in the morning where you lay out that grid of what the topics will be. So this event is coming up Saturday. I mentioned May 16th. Where is the event, Bert? And where can they find more information?
Well, I'm glad you asked. This is going to take place on May 16th. It's going to be at the Iolani School Sullivan Center, a great place for collaboration and innovation. And if you want to get more information, you can go to unconference.com. And of course, I will put that up on the show notes.
All right. That's great. Well, we hope that you can make it. That's the news for this week. When we return, we'll be joined by Linda Chutakeyama, Tiffany Cazada, and Unica Escalante to talk about Fahrenheit 73.
And how does Fahrenheit 73 address the age-old problem of cooling classrooms? And of course, today's show is pre-recorded and we won't be taking any calls, but we still hope you enjoy the program.
That's right.
This is Bite Marks Cafe.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And joining us today is Linda Chu Takayama, Tiffany Quezada, and Unica Escalante. Linda is on the board of Hawaii's 3Rs, and she's also the newly confirmed director of the Department of Land and Industrial Relations, and of course, formerly with the city's Office of Economic Development.
Labor, that is. Tiffany Quezada is a student mentor for the Center for Tomorrow's Leaders, and Unica Escalante is a Fahrenheit 73 organization liaison and a senior at Moanalua High School.
And of course, how did all the players come together to make this project happen? And of course, today's show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking any calls today, but we want to welcome you all to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thanks for having us.
Now, I want to start with Unica, because Unica, there's a team of students that were sort of involved with coming up with this idea. And I want to give you the opportunity to tell us, how did that brainstorming session happen that ultimately resulted in Fahrenheit 73?
Well, there's five students involved in the project. So there's me, and there's Noah Farrow from Kamehameha High School, and mm-hmm. he's our social media organizer. And there's Carissa Tan from Mid-Pacific Institute, and she's just basically our project manager, keeping us all on task. And there's Ali Sanders from Punahou, and she's our PR manager. And there's Kenneth Goh from Damien Memorial Schools, and he is our finance director.
Mm-hmm.
So all five of us are part of this leadership program called the Center for Tomorrow's Leaders. And the Center for Tomorrow's Leaders basically just takes public and private school students from all over the state and all over the island to kind of teach us how to be the next generation's leaders mm-hmm. in Hawaii. So part of the program is to have a community project.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal for our group, for the community project, is we wanted to inspire students to be more involved in the community and to kind of use their voice and just talk about the issues that they're facing and be involved in the decision-making process. So what better way to do that than to tackle an issue that is so prevalent in Hawaii, mm-hmm. and that's uncomfortable classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to ask you, which was, I have three school-aged kids, so the challenge of concentrating when your classrooms are hot is really clear to a lot of people who have kids. So can you lay the stage for people who aren't familiar with this? I mean, how hot are we talking? Imagine trying to get work done in this environment. But what were you seeing as you were doing research on this project?
Well, I'm a public school student, and some of my classrooms aren't air conditioned. So I know that my AP environmental science class, I usually have it at the end of the day, and it's usually very stifling hot. We don't really have fans in the classroom, so I'm falling asleep. Mm-hmm. So basically the research is personal for me because I've been going through the problems that these students are facing. But mm-hmm. there's also been studies that's been done that just kind of contrast the scores of classrooms in the 90 degree range and also in the lower 70 degree range. So that's basically how we got our name, Fahrenheit 73, because mm-hmm. those studies found that the optimal learning temperature is 73 degrees mm-hmm, Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly not 90 degrees, or 100 degrees. I remember, it made the news. Castle, I think, high school was the one that saw the 100 degree temperatures in their wooden portable classrooms outside.
Uh-huh. Now, so you five students, you're coming up with this idea. It's a community service idea. You want to address something that a lot of classrooms or a lot of students are encountering, just the fact that, their schools don't have air conditioning. So, Tiffany, I want to give you a chance to, you're a mentor for this Center for Tomorrow's Leaders. And what is your role in sort of helping these students perhaps move their idea to an actual project?
So I've been volunteering for the Center for Tomorrow's Leaders for about a year now, started in last August. This is my first year with the program. Mm-hmm. I just had a wonderful experience working with them. It's a very small organization, but they do amazing work both with their fellows program, which UNICA is a part of, and they also have a schools program where they do non-traditional leadership training. So this is for students that aren't already in student government, and they are identified as people with potential and are put into this leadership program in the school level. And so when I found the opportunity to join at the Fellows Program, I couldn't say no. And it's just been amazing to watch them learn. And they go through a leadership training process. They learn all about modeling the way and taking initiative. And they talk to business leaders from all over the state, CEOs, entrepreneurs and the like. And they learn so much just mm-hmm. from their experiences.
So in terms of how much time, UNICA, I mean, when you talk about, let's say, the Center for Tomorrow's Leaders, and is it like a weekly class? Is it like a weekend thing? I mean, do you have to do it every evening? I mean, what's the routine that you have to go through?
Well, the sessions are every other Sunday for about an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. But the project is basically just based on the group's what the group wants to do. Mm-hmm. So.
But it's an extracurricular activity. It's not part of your school day. Right. It's something you're doing in addition to it.
Yeah.
And they definitely picked a project that's a bit larger in scope than I'd say than most of the other students would
pick.
Well,
let me ask you about that. I mean, I try to support my high school, my alma mater, Mililani High School, and last year I tried to donate a car, and I did eventually donate a car to the shop. Now, if you were going to donate a car and they just wanted the money, they just say, give us the money. But I really wanted – they were looking for vehicles to work on. So it sounds like it would be a simple thing. Free car for
right.
school.
Just drive your car over there, drop it off, and give
Turns
the keys,
out,
right?
It's not. And there's paperwork, and there's all sorts of, like, is this under that or under who, and who signs what? So when you're talking about a project, a community project, a stream cleanup is one thing. But we want to put install a air conditioner, a special solar-powered air conditioner, we'll talk about that in a bit, on an actual classroom that affects actual students on school property. I mean, aren't there so many hurdles? It sounds almost impossible to me to achieve that.
Absolutely. It's actually a miracle that they've been able to pull all of the right partners together. And they started, as I said, in August with the classroom, with the training. And then they developed the idea of what they wanted to do. And it took until about early January to actually get the right people sitting down in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
The DOE facilities office has been a huge help. And they actually connected us to Hawaii 3Rs and Green Path Technologies, which are the main two partners in this campaign. So thankfully, the DOE was the one who was really behind this and being able to help connect all the right pieces. And I just looked around that room in that meeting in January, and there were about 15-20 people there. And I was like, wow, we actually have all the pieces to make this work. Because before that, we were getting a little discouraged. You know, it's not as simple as just putting in a wall-mounted AC unit or just a standard split AC unit. This is a very high-tech system that they're going to be installing.
Now, well, we talked a little bit to Dana, and she mentioned that one problem is if you might think you're helping when you say, hey, I've got a great wall-mounted air conditioner. I'm going to give it to the school, but it turns out it costs the school not just to install it, but it costs more energy to run it. So a lot of times they can't accept a donation like that. But you mentioned Hawaii 3Rs. We have Linda here, and it's actually an organization with a great bit of history, and it actually helps make that connection. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Hawaii 3Rs is a nonprofit that was exactly designed to take care of this kind of problem. Started in 2001 under Senator Dan Inouye, one of his nonprofits. We thought that there were a lot of people out in the community who, like you, want to help their school. I mean, you know, the typical question you ask somebody you just meet, what school you went?
Right.
And, you know, there's an aloha in your heart for your school forever. So everybody, we felt, wanted to help their school but didn't know how to make it happen. And the school doesn't make it any easier for them, as you found out.
And they have other priorities, of course,
they have
as well.
Other those principals are very much beleaguered by all the things that they have to do. And the DOE facilities folks are very cautious about the kinds of donations they get for some of the reasons you indicated. They have to maintain it over the life of, you know, whatever it is that's donated. And if it doesn't meet state standards, they can't accept it to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
They have lots of horror stories about people who, well-meaning folks, who get together on a weekend, build a shed for the school for storage or something. DAGs will not accept it. doesn't meet standards, isn't maybe safe, doesn't meet the building code. So it's not that mm-hmm. simple.
Right, right.
3Rs is designed to take care of those things. We work very closely with the DOE. We will not take on a project unless it is part of the DOE backlog list, which would indicate that it's something the school wants and needs. And secondly, that there is a standard for the kinds of elements that go into whatever the project is, whether it be painting or electricity or whatever it is. So it's okay with DOE, and the 3Rs can organize all of the other elements that go with it.
And if I'm correct, I mean, especially when it was making all those headlines a few years ago and with the hot schools, there's actually within the DOE a heat abatement program, which is attempting to address this issue. But with almost any other, along with any other project, there's other priorities, there's funding issues. And so the Hawaii 3Rs is kind of connecting those, that clear need and this opportunity for the community to contribute.
That's correct. And we hopefully are able to coordinate all of those various elements and bring them together with a purpose on a particular school. So we were very interested to hear from Unica and Tiffany, because although 3Rs over the course of the years, we've done well over 500 projects on six islands in 167 different schools. We have never before had a student group come to us. And this is probably an indication of the kind of leadership that they're experiencing and taking on for themselves. Mm-hmm. Because not only did they come to us with the idea of doing a project like this, but they also went so far as to raise the money for it.
And we'll talk about that.
We get to the raise the money part.
Sorry.
What I wanted to find out was, so Unica, you know, you guys are coming up with this idea. You have this a student group. You have a project. And then now, somewhere along the line, the DOE, somebody said, oh, you got to talk to 3Rs, or you got to talk to Linda, or somebody, you know, called Linda up. I mean, was that the way the connection was made? How did you guys, as students, put your proposal together and get it in the hands of Hawaii 3Rs?
Well, first we kind of started contacting some schools that we felt needed the ACs the most. So, for example, McKinley and Campbell, we contacted them. But they suggested that we contact the DOE first so that we make sure that we're not breaking any laws or anything.
Okay,
but
so initially you were trying to go directly from your guys' idea project mm-hmm. to the school,
yeah.
right? Okay, so then they said, okay, go talk to the DOE. Let's see if this is actually sanctioned, right?
Mm-hmm. If it's actually viable.
Mm-hmm.
And so we made contact with the auxiliary mm-hmm. Department of the DOE, and that's how they connected us to Hawaii 3Rs.
Mm-hmm. Now, Unica, Linda mentioned it's special because it's driven by the students, and it's such a Tiffany said, "What a grand scope! Most of the projects aren't this ambitious." I mean, did you have any idea, or did you get a sense of the scale of what you were trying to do versus perhaps what another student group might try to do? Did you ever doubt your ability to get something like this done?
Well, it's certainly a big cookie to take a bite out of, but we are really. We believed in the project, and we are really motivated by, you know, helping our peers mm-hmm. and just making a difference and inspiring other students.
Now, Linda, when you first got word of this project, was there a particular format that you needed? You know, what was your first response or reaction? Like, what? Who are these kids? You know, what was the first sort of response that you had when you came about this opportunity?
I don't think that was her response.
Oh, I know. I'm you know, giving her the opportunity to raise above my. You know.
Well, they were smart enough to go through the DOE. So the proposal came to us through some of the DOE folks. And as it turns out, the superintendent, the assistant superintendent responsible for facilities, is on the 3Rs board.
Okay.
So, you know, he calls me up and he says, hey, there's something we want you to take a look at. So we did. and sat down with them in that meeting that Tiffany's referring to. We do have a certain criteria. We require that for each of the projects we undertake, there is actually a grant application. And so we made them jump through all the hoops, everything pretty much checked out. In working with them, I think hopefully they've learned a little bit about some of the processes that businesses have to go through to make sure that everything is done in the correct way. So might be a little frustrating for student types, all the paperwork involved, but you know, it's part of the process.
I mean, some of us haven't figured it out as adults, so that they're figuring it out in high school is very impressive.
Yeah, so Unica, you know, I want to hear about your sort of experience going through the process of the bureaucracy. So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with both Linda Chutakayama, Tiffany Kizada, Kizada, and Unica Escalante about Fahrenheit 73.
How did they find the way to raise the money for this project, and what kind of air conditioner are we talking about here?
Yeah, what
Please
kind?
Note that this program is pre-recorded, so we won't be able to take your calls, but we always welcome your feedback. You can email that to feedback@bitemarks.org. You're listening to Bite Marks Cafe.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ran Ozawa. And we're talking to Linda Chutakayama, Tiffany Kizada, and Unica Escalante about crowdfunding to support schools and get their classrooms cooler.
And of course, is crowdfunding a reliable source of donations? Now, right before the break, we were talking about going through the process. And I'm kind of curious, Unica, like going through the sort of administrative process to do a project, you know, students, and I think a lot of adults, man, you got an idea, you want to just do it, just, you know, let's just do it. Why do we have to go through a process? What was your sort of impression of having to go through the process that you did?
Well, as a student, I'm part of the student government, and I'm also part of CTL, so that's kind of gotten me used to the, as you said, the bureaucratic type of communication. But working with the DOE, it's been a learning experience for me, because I realized how busy and how many things these adults have to take care of. So we're not their main focus, because they have all of these other things that they want to accomplish as well. So I realized that sometimes I have to work better with other people and just kind of take my time and yeah.
Now, Unica, you know, Linda mentioned, you know, sometimes you just can't, it's not like you can even just give a shed to a school, because there's issues, there's safety issues, there's code zoning issues possibly. I wanted to know, as you prepared your application and started to look through some of these requirements, did you learn something about the process that surprised you in a good way? Like, oh, I hadn't even thought about that aspect of what we were trying to do, and it's good that this process exists to make sure that it's vetted. I wanted to know, you know, if you learned something about that, something that they required you to do that you didn't think you had to, but that made complete sense.
Part of it was the backlog list that Ms. Linda talked about, how they had to make sure that the schools actually needed it and actually wanted materials.
And Linda, you know, so going through the process, I mean, I think the important thing is not only seeing if the project is a viable project, but is it a sustainable project? So what was it that these students, the team, what did they indicate to you that this could be something sustainable and really kind of piqued your interest?
Well, they targeted a very important need in the school. So the DOE was actively looking for a way to address the issue of the temperature in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, in many respects, we're looking upon this as a pilot project. Mm. Because, you know, the temperature in those portables, I mean, it's excessive. In many cases, you know, 100 degrees all day long. And as one of their the teachers in one of the portables was saying, she goes, it's, you know, it's bad enough. Students have to try to learn in that environment. But they're here for one class and they can go outside.
Yeah,
you know,
the
she
teacher.
Goes, I have to be here. 8 hours a day.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So if you can imagine what they have to go through. So the DOE is very interested in finding a solution, particularly one that is sustainable, that doesn't require a lot of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rates these days are so high,
right,
that
right.
A DOE has a hard time meeting its obligation to just for the electricity part.
Well, and that's a good point. So it's not just simply, you know, Unica, like, hey, let's go get the biggest, best, most, you know, hard-blowing air conditioner. Tiffany, how did you decide, or who was it that decided to go kind of the clean energy route and bring GreenPath into the picture?
Well, when we had first looked at the project, we had just wanted to do AC. And, you know, we thought that that was just raising money to get as many AC units
right,
as we
right.
could.
Right, just get that big blower in there. And
exactly. And then we discovered that it needed to be sustainable because of the electricity bill.
Mm-hmm.
That was their main concern, was because their utility bill is astronomical. And they are doing the Kahe initiative to install solar AC in all of the public schools within the next 5 years. And that's a fantastic initiative. But what happens until then? And so we had actually talked to the DOE, and they'd done a pilot project with GreenPath at YNI High School.
Oh, they did? Okay.
And so they had donated 2 units, and they had tested it, and it had been up for several months at the time. So they had data that could tell them exactly how long it took, and it was such a quiet unit, which was what the teacher in that classroom was really excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, with a normal split AC unit, they're still trying to talk over this machine
mm-hmm.
that's running in the classroom. So it's really quiet, and they actually found they put 2 units in one classroom that they wouldn't necessarily use the second unit as much, because one unit was really strong. So it was really great to kind of learn about what the classroom requirements were. Campbell's a little different because they have more bodies in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at 2 units in one classroom. But if we can get away with doing just one, that's what this pilot is for.
Well, from an engineering standpoint, I mean, when you're talking about GreenPath and you have solar panels and they are basically, you know, driving the air conditioning, there's the issue of where you're going to put the solar panels. So does it, you know, does it obviously mean that it's going to go on the roof? What if the roof, you know, is covered by a mango tree or something? I mean, what was the thought process by which, you know, you could engineer the GreenPath into that classroom?
So GreenPath Technologies is the sole distributor of Climatech,
mm-hmm.
which is the actual AC unit that will be installed. And so the Climatech units, they have 3 panels that attach to the unit and a compressor. And they will install that on the roof of the building. And that's mainly for security for the AC as well, because you don't want it to get vandalized.
Mm-hmm.
And then the unit is installed in the actual classroom on a wall. On the
mm-hmm.
wall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a split AC, but it's also a hybrid. So for instance, if it's a rainy day, it will pull off of the grid. But it's completely separate from the grid in the sense that you don't need HECO approval in order to install. So it just acts like a normal utility where it just pulls off of the grid if
mm-hmm.
it needs electricity
mm-hmm.
on a rainy day. But they do identify the classrooms that are the best for this, that of course have a clear roof with no
mm-hmm.
tree above
no mango
them.
Tree. Okay.
No mango tree. And also the ones that are the hottest. So we actually identified 4 classrooms that were next to each other. We're targeting one with this campaign, and they were all right next to each other and all part of the heat abatement study that the DOE was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So they
mm-hmm.
have actually measuring devices that have already been installed, which so as soon as these AC police units are in, they can see exactly how every little change affected the temperature in the room.
Now, Unica, you talked about how this was near and dear to your heart because as a public school student, you experienced some of these hot classrooms. I certainly remember it from my days in the former Pineapple Fields in Mililani, and then, of course, my daughter now still going to the same school. But we talked about the pilot that happened at this previously. So I wanted to know, have you experienced the other side of that, the success of this project, or have a vision of it? Maybe students that feel they can concentrate more, or a teacher that is able to last an entire day in a classroom. And did you have an opportunity to experience that as well?
Yeah, so we actually went to Waianae to visit the portable classroom and to kind of check out the AC unit, and we were able to talk to the teacher who was in that classroom, and he talked about how much of a big difference it made to his students, because before they had to, between classes, they had to move to a different classroom that was less hot, and that just kind of took time away from the learning. So instead, now they can just stay in the same classroom and have more time to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that we actually talked to the teacher who's in Portable 1 at James Campbell High School, where we will be installing the unit once our campaign is successful. And one interesting thing that he told me is that the DOE doesn't purchase the floor fans. So all the floor fans that you'll see in any portable classroom or classroom in Hawaii are purchased by the teachers for the most part.
Really?
And
wow.
These students will fight over the fans and where to sit. Go to class early so they can get in a good spot. He provides water for his students because it is such an issue. And even for his classroom in particular, it's near where there's a grassy field around it. And so when they mow the lawn, which is during the day, they have grass coming in the windows, which have no screens. So they're dealing with the noise from the lawnmower. They can't close anything or it's going to be ridiculously hot.
Yeah.
And there's grass coming in the windows.
Right.
So thankfully with this, they'll be able to close off and put plexiglass on the windows and be able to have AC in a cool environment.
You know, you've raised so many points. I mean, already we know that our teachers are hardworking, and they do use spend their own money for teaching supplies, paper, pencils, things so their students can do the activities that are learning. But what we're talking about here is just having a livable environment in which to learn. And I can already smell the grass clippings in my nose and the hot classroom and everything. But you mentioned what you also mentioned is the money factor, and Linda did as well, that this has to be sustainable, not just for energy and not being on the grid, but that it has to be something that isn't going to take another chunk out of the capital improvement fund that's already taxed at the DOE. So we've mentioned at the start of the show, this is a crowdfunded project. Unica, what does that mean?
So crowdfunding is basically tapping into the community and asking the community to help out with donations or just any way that they can to help fund the project. So our crowdfunding campaign is based off of a local crowdfunding site called Island Funder. And if you log on to Island Funder, we're on the main page. And so, yeah, you'll just be able to see us right off the bat.
You can just look up for Fahrenheit 73. No. Whose idea was it to go to Island Funder? I mean, we've heard of Island Funder. We've done stories about Island Funder, but I'm actually impressed that you as a team came up with that. I mean, whose idea was, hey, let's go with Island Funder?
Miss Tiff is part of the whole startup community, so. Yeah.
That's right. We had Tiffany on Hobnob. We got to mention Hobnob, right?
So we had actually wanted to work with WeFficiency, but because they do the donation program, which we thought was, you know, really appealing. So that concept is essentially where a donor can loan their money towards a cause, and then after they get their energy efficient savings, the nonprofit would pay back the donor, and then they'd be able to donate towards another project. And we love that concept, but we weren't able to do it because it was just a little bit more complicated with the donation concept and working with the DOE and having to track it than just a straight crowdfunding campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So, Unica, how much are you trying to raise, and what does that cover?
So we're raising $19,000 to install two photovoltaic AC units and in the hottest classroom at Campbell High School, which is Portable 1.
That sounds like it's largely the cost of the equipment. Mm-hmm. Now, I would imagine for the student project, in addition to coming up with this proposal, working through 3Rs and all of the proposal requirements, it sounds like, especially since you're here, that outreach and interacting with the community and bringing attention to and getting people to the crowdfunding site is part of what you're learning to do in the class as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you getting the word out to to make sure that this crowdfunding campaign is a success?
So a big part of the crowdfunding campaign is the social media aspect. And Noah is actually in charge of the social media. And we've been doing Instagram from the start of the campaign. And we actually do this cool thing where we post Snapchats mm-hmm. of the classrooms and have the temperature filter on the Snapchat so that...
So is the Snapchat 70, Fahrenheit 73? Is that the name for Snapchat?
Fahrenheit_73
Yeah. Oh, but cool. What you're saying is, and my daughter loves Snapchat. In fact,
I like Snapchat.
I have to communicate with her that way too. but because in Snapchat is the ability to automatically overlay the temperature that you're at mm-hmm. when you take that picture and share it. So this is actually kind of excellent. Students in classrooms across the state can say, "Hey, I am sitting in my classroom right now, and look, 89 degrees mm-hmm. or 94 degrees."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's instant recognition of how hot classrooms are.
I
was going to say, if you're a student listening and would like to take a Snapchat in your classroom, you can go ahead and send it to us. Just take a screenshot and post it on our Facebook. It's at Fahrenheit 73 on Instagram and Twitter.
Okay. And then on Facebook, what is it? Fahrenheit 73
as
well? Yeah. Now, Linda, you know, here's a great student team. They've got a fundraising a method through Island Funder. You know, they've got a very clean energy solution with GreenPath. How do you see this perhaps replicating across other schools? And, you know, they may be so, you know, Unica is probably so successful at getting the outreach out for Campbell that they may, you know, they may basically take the winds out of everybody else's sail to get their project going. How do you see this perhaps replicating and being sustained over other schools? Because I think this could be done elsewhere.
We're really excited about this because I've always felt that for school repair and maintenance, crowdsourcing mm-hmm. is ideal. Again, you know, like we said, everybody has a warm spot in their heart for either their neighborhood school or their childhood school. I've got to believe that given the opportunity, they'd be willing to, you know, contribute, whether it's volunteer labor or, you know, a few dollars. So we're kind of looking at this very closely to see how well they do. And I'm hoping that it could be something that we could use as a template for other schools across the state. I can see maybe tapping into some alumni associations,
for sure.
some PTA groups, and getting them excited about some need that they see at their school that they'd be willing to put some dollars to.
Now, this was really pioneered by a unique set of students that came together and kind of proposed this. Do you see that being a something that needs to be replicated, or are there other sort of service groups that could still take on that charge and replicate this in other schools? Because these students aren't going to be able to do it, you know,
for elsewhere. Hundreds of
right,
schools.
Right.
We'd certainly welcome it if they wanted
yeah.
to. That would probably be the ideal way to do it. Find some group of students or community folks around a particular school to gather together and tap their friends and neighbors to do
yeah,
it.
I could see a student Lions Club working with the adult
exactly.
community
mm-hmm.
Lions Club mm-hmm. or Key Club or something
but that,
like
does
that.
Does that become a Hawaii 3Rs sort of initiative, or where is that? Because this was generated by the students coming to you. Now, would it be 3Rs kind of going back out to these different organizations?
I think we can take some role in trying to put some of those things together, because certainly in the projects that we do, we require actually a volunteer component
mm-hmm.
In every one of our 500 some odd projects. So sometimes we work with the community groups in the area. Other times it'll be with corporate groups. We're doing a number of projects with First Hawaiian Bank. We've done them with Prudential Locations, Central Pacific Bank, and others, you know, kind of community-minded corporations. I can see that. But again, you know, tapping into some of the other smaller community groups and really making this a grassroots effort.
Mm-hmm. Now, the good thing about crowdfunding and Island Funder is I could contribute, and I have, you know, you could do $5, $10, whatever you can. But certainly, as Linda mentioned, corporate backers are a big part of success. And I know you have a few more days left for this campaign. But Tiffany, you have had some success engaging local companies to support for for this project, correct?
Oh, absolutely. We've seen so much support from the community. I do want to mention, just as Linda had said, about the alumni associations. The James Campbell High School Alumni Association has already donated $3,000 towards the campaign, and that's their minimum. They're hoping they can do more later.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Island Insurance came in at a $5,000, which we call our Celsius sponsor. They all have temperature-related names. And we're just so thankful to them. And every sponsor, whether it was $20 or $5,000, you know, every little bit makes a difference. And it's just awesome to see the students supported in this project.
So that's a great point. You know, the Campbell, let's say, Alumni Association, they see a couple of units going into a couple of classrooms. Are they taking the, you know, sort of the banner and continuing perhaps get it into more classrooms at Campbell? And will they, have you seen indications that they will take it to the next level?
I don't think that they necessarily will do it on their own, but they're willing to support if there's like another group that's going to do another classroom. Mm-hmm, they're definitely mm-hmm. willing to support as much as they can, especially with Hawaii 3Rs doing things at Campbell High School.
Well, I love the job you're doing in spreading the word, Unica, but our favorite question to ask the students who join us on the show is, you know, you're also a student and you're making the plans for your future. What does that future entail? What does the Center for Tomorrow's Leaders help you and this project help you see for the next 4 years of your life?
Personally?
Yeah.
Or for the project?
Personally.
Where are you going? You're a senior. Where are you going?
Oh, I'm actually staying on island. I'm going to go to UH Manoa.
All right.
And I'm pursuing studying journalism.
So. Oh, that's oh, a that's dear and dear to your
dear
heart.
To my heart.
Yes. Yeah, so if you have any connections, that you
okay. He'll give you all the lowdown, right?
So, Unica, give us the last pitch. Somebody listening to the show wants to help students cool their classroom, just this one classroom, but it's a start, it's an idea that can grow. How can they support Fahrenheit 73?
If you want to help support and fund an AC unit, go on to Island Funder. And donate as much as you can, $20 or up to our Fahrenheit sponsor. And you could also go on to our Facebook page, like us, share us on Facebook and on Instagram, post pictures, tweet at us, anything that you could do to help spread the word.
Very good.
Great
Linda
job.
Chu Takayama is the treasurer over at the Hawaii 3Rs. Tiffany Kazeda is a mentor at the Center for Tomorrow's Leaders. And of course, Unica Escalante is a senior over at Moanalua High School. Thank you. Thank you all for joining us today.
Mahalo.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we will focus on the science behind the 30-meter telescope.
And of course, if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And of course, if you have any comments or suggestions, email us at feedback@bitemarks.org. And you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Bite Marks.
And you can follow me at Hawaii. Our engineer is David Chong, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And we leave you with our song pick of the week. Here's a band called Digitalism and a song called Fahrenheit 32.
Ooh, oh.
Welcome. Well, we'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.